Ladies and gentlemen, come one, come all. A true feast for your senses. Sideshow spectacular. With your hosts, Kathy and Brian, only on Jackalope Radio.
The show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sideshow Radio Spectacular. We're here on Tuesday again with my lovely co-host, Anita Brown.
Hello.
And our wonderful producer, Todd Sheets.
Hey.
Hey, and Kathy Bartz is going to be out this week, and we hope she is to feeling better. She has been doing a lot of coughing and got a lot of pain going on, so we really hope she gets feeling better soon, and all of our warm wishes and all that's with her tonight and her little gnome body. Everybody send your nice little energies and prayers and voodoos and all that stuff to her so she'll get all better very soon, and she can be back on the road to Isengard.
There you go. Yeah. Her movie came out last night, The Hobbit.
I know. We got it on Blu-ray, and I wonder if the special features have got the little, I don't know.
It's got the little Kathy interview.
Yeah.
That is so funny.
We're kind of just winging it this week. We're going to be hanging out just talking about weird, wild, whatever's going on in the world. You know, there's always something going on. If you lay down for a couple of weeks and something sticks its head up, or, you know, it's... You know how the world is. We can't just go have normal stuff ever. So,
true.
Yep. Speaking of abnormal, what is up with all the sinkholes? There was a sinkhole in the news that ate a man right out of his bedroom.
That I've been noticing a lot of that lately, and it's kind of weird. We're like hearing all this weird stuff coming. I don't know, the Earth's been around for all this time, but we're hearing all this apocalyptic stuff happening, and we're supposedly using chemical weapons on somebody now, and we're on the brink of World War III, and it's all gloom and doom, you know, and you just gotta wonder if it's holding any water, if everybody's just kind of, you know.
Well, I wonder if stuff like this, especially with the sinkholes, is that something that's been occurring all along and we just never really heard about it? And now we hear about everything because of the internet and Facebook, and, you know, I don't know what the case is. Is there really an increase in it, or is just there more access to news media?
I don't know, because we've had news media before. We've had Facebook, and unless it was going on in a big, wide, a huge thing where they're like just kind of networking together and saying, hey, we're getting a lot of sinkholes here or something like that. Only the big ones are really going to make the news. I'm sure there's very small ones happening all the time that never get mentioned. Hey, we had a sinkhole today and we lost the tool shed or something like that. But,
right. You know,
it's stuff like that don't make the news. So these could be happening, all the time, but we're just not hearing much about them. We'll probably hear more about them. We hear a lot more stuff since the advent of social media, you know. So we're, you know, every time something comes up and then people start getting paranoid and they're passing stuff like, oh God, the world's collapsing in on itself and we're on the brink of World War III, and it's easy to get caught up in stuff like that, especially with the times being hard like it is. And it's like, you know, you kind of wonder, it crosses your mind, you know, are we doing the right things to the earth? Are we in the right spot here? You know, are we just parasites that's polluting the earth and it just needs to shake us off like a bad case of fleas or what?
Right.
You know.
The article I found, I had thought just from all the news that I had seen that the majority of these sinkholes were happening in Florida. Apparently, a man named Mark Korb has a sinkhole in his pond now in Newcastle, California. On Sunday, he woke up to find a sinkhole had accomplished the same feat in merely 5 hours of draining his pond, which used to take him a week. Korb's discovery comes just 2 weeks after a 20-foot-wide sinkhole swallowed a man in Florida. A search for his body was called off on March 3, 2012, and he was presumed dead. The next day, a second sinkhole formed less than 2 miles from the first, but no deaths occurred. Last Tuesday, a sinkhole in Washington, D.C. closed down an entire block as officials worked to prevent a water pipe and nearby vehicles from caving in. Again, in Florida, this says thousands of sinkholes form each year, but they're known to appear all over the U.S., typically in areas where water has flowed underground and dissolved rock.
Mm-hmm.
So why is this suddenly such a big thing in the news if it's common?
I don't know. Maybe it's not so common. You know, they've been doing a lot of stuff to get fuel out of the ground lately. They've started all this fracking stuff, and they've been doing the oil drillings and stuff like that. You know, I'll know that's the big BP blowout disaster down in Florida, and they were, you know, a lot of people claimed the well's still leaking, and they never did really close the well up. They just partially patched it up. They're still drilling down there, and it's, you know, they really hit something with that, and it's, you gotta wonder if that's got something to do with it, and, you know, they've tapped into something that's causing all these sinkholes or something like that. It depends on what area they're in, I guess, but, you know, if all this stuff's linked together underground, if there's, like, these, you know, like veins of, I don't know how it all works, you know, or anything. I'm just going to try to sound intelligent for a minute here. But if they're all like, you know, all like in a, like veins under the ground or something, you tap into one area, is it going to make, you know, less pressure in another area and just going to start making, you know, could cause sinkholes, you know, thousands of miles down the line. You know, and it's, they're doing all this fracking stuff, so they're getting into the, you know, the plates and blowing them apart. So it's, you know, if you're going to have stuff like that, you're going to see, you know, results. You're going to have the planet you're on fighting back if you're trying to fight it to get stuff out of it.
Right. I don't know. It seems like things like this, you know, first we had all of the guys running around eating people. And, mm-hmm. you know, then there's the sinkholes, and it just seems like the news takes on patterns now. Where it used to be, you know, you would just turn the turn your television on and watch the news. Mm-hmm. And whatever was actually happening was on the news, and that was it, and it was random.
Yeah.
And now it's like you go through these patterns where one incident happens, and everybody's in a big clamor in competition to get the best story. So suddenly you have 20 or 30 stories about the same thing happening all over the place. And, you know, like in the case of the cannibalism, that could cause a panic.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, fear sells. It's like we're reading stories in the newspaper about how some fancy neighborhood down in South Atlanta has just installed some speed bumps or something like that. They wrote a big article on that, you know, versus somebody just got ate. You know, what's everybody going to read? You know, right. The fear sells, the fear factor sells. It's, you know, people start feeding on all this stuff. Okay, what's going on in Florida? We've got sinkholes, we've got people eating each other, we've got all this stuff going on. And it's just, and you start connecting all this stuff together. You can come up with a pretty grim story with all this World War III stuff and all the stuff going on in our country with this indefinite detention stuff, gun grabbing, going down to, you know, across the seas, you know, Israel's fixing to blow Iran up, we're fixing to go to war with Syria and all this, and it's, you know, you can paint a pretty grim picture in your head, and it doesn't take much, and it's all out there, and it's a lot of, you know, negativity, and if, you know, maybe if the people looked at more positive stuff, we're looking at stuff how, an extinct butterfly was, you know, discovered on this island, and, you know, they're no longer extinct, we're getting them, you know, back into the wild, or of how these, you know, trees that were once died out are now, you know, coming back, making a comeback or something like that. You start reading positive stuff like that?
I would love to read something positive.
Yeah. And
it never happens.
No, because it's, I mean, you hear about the positive stuff and you're like, that's a good story, but you know, most of the people where our brain is trained, we go right to the whole you know, what sounds more interesting. Me, if I'm reading something, I see all this stuff. I'm like, oh, well, that's cool. You just read the headlines. That's all you need from it. You got somebody that's out there eating another man's ass, and you're like, oh, boy, let's read this, you know. Maybe the zombie apocalypse is actually here, and we can start having some fun, right?
I don't know. I guess it depends on what you consider fun. I don't think that would be very fun.
Oh, no. I mean, you got to think it's not fun. Away. I mean, I was like actually having dreams about that last night, so it's, you know. It was kind of fun in the dream, but, you know, of course I woke up from that, so.
Right. I don't know. You should elaborate on that a little more.
I don't know. It was kind of like a cowboy and Indian things. We're just kind of like riding around the back of trucks and lassoing zombies with bungee cords and hitting the gas and ripping their heads off. It was pretty fun.
I thought that was interesting how you were killing them with the bungee cords. That's pretty inventive.
You gotta improvise, and it's just in case it happens. That's good idea. Maybe that's a sign that the world's ending right there. We're just having dreams that are giving us clues on how to save save ammo.
Right. In other news, and again, we never find anything positive. Some things are funny, but I wouldn't call them positive. I'm sure you guys remember the last time we were on live, we had the woman who decided to do a strip show at the school assembly.
Mm-hmm.
This time we have a Chuck E. Cheese brawl. Child's birthday turns into an 18-man fist fight, and there are drug arrests involved in Florida.
Wow.
What started as a standard child's birthday party in Florida at Chuck E. Cheese ended in an 18-man brawl that led to a shooting and at least three arrests. The melee on Saturday led to the arrests of Brianna Walker, the birthday child's mother, Alfred Peoples, and Robert Thompson, according to WPBF. Walker allegedly had a Xanax pill and marijuana in her purse, and someone with her was found with crack cocaine and morphine.
Wow.
This just sounds like such a wonderful birthday party for a child.
Exactly. And where did that happen at? Florida, right?
Yeah.
Where's the sinkholes happen at? Florida. Where is the cannibalism at? Florida. You know, it's if you're in Florida, get the hell out. You can't even go to Chuck E. Cheese. You can't go in your backyard without getting sucked up by the earth. You know, if you survive all that, some guy's going to eat your ass. So.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's not the place to be. So call up to New York, tell all your New Yorkians to quit moving down to Florida. So, you know,
well, apparently
they're much safer up there.
This all started in the bathroom of a Boynton Beach Chuck E. Cheese where two men started arguing. Just minutes later, they allegedly started a fist fight in the dining room and another 16 people joined in. Employees were able to move the battle outside, but not before the birthday boy's grandmother was trampled. Wow.
Oh, man.
The fight spilled out into the street and continued miles away where one man pulled a gun and fired at a car, hitting a passenger in the leg.
Oh, that man, we got gunfire, too.
That suspect is still at large. When police arrived, they found Walker, Peoples, and Thompson in the parking lot and arrested them on drug charges. They also allegedly left the restaurant during the fight without paying a $300 bill.
Now, that's my kind of Chuck E. Cheese party. You know, you're sitting around listening to the little brats playing and all this, and it's getting boring, and you're about to pull your hair out, and some action breaks up. That's what I call a Chuck E. Cheese party. I mean, those kids will never forget that.
Oh, and get this. Investigators later found empty vodka bottles hidden in a diaper bag at the scene.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess the Xanax and the marijuana and the crack and the... Then what else was it? I know there was some morphine. Yeah, apparently all that wasn't enough.
No, nothing gives all that stuff the extra little boost it needs like the vodka, right?
Apparently not.
Yeah, took a handful of morphine, chase down some vodka. Good times. Good times. Let's set a good example for these kids. Oh,
and
good
apparently,
stuff.
We have in our chat room, we have the wonderful, the lovely Christina Rake. She was a little bit late tonight. She has been able to join us. Todd, if you'd like to pull her up there on Skype for us.
All right, I'm working on it.
Okay.
I'm working on it.
I didn't know if you were still there or not.
Yep.
Hmm.
Awesome.
Looks like I'm still seeing, I'm only seeing two people in the chat room here. This is kind of I hope we're not have that double thing going on like we did the other night.
It looks like she left. It's just myself and Stu in there from what I can see.
And it's just me and Stu in there from what I can see. So we've got that little thing going on like the other night.
That is so odd.
Yeah.
Well, while we are
didn't that happen
on this
last time you logged in from my computer, though?
I don't remember.
Yeah, it's. I can see one, but I can see the other, or something like that.
Right, I'm not sure.
Now I see Christina in there, but I don't see you in there.
Hmm.
Let's see if anybody can see this. Oh.
Okay. One.
Nope. Okay.
I'm still here.
All right.
In other news, on the alien front, renowned scientists are now saying that ETs exist. Seems like every year someone is called a renowned scientist that says ETs exist. Mm. The Milky Way galaxy is so big that there's no doubt, statistically speaking, that ETs exist. That's what several prominent scientists say on the month-long series Are We Alone? Airing on the Science Channel. But what do these otherworldly denizens look like? Are they smart or dumb? Will we ever come face-to-face with them? On the first installment of Aliens, the Definitive Guide, premiering tonight, famed theoretical physicist Michio Kaku, I don't ever say his name right. I know we tried to talk about him on the last show, and I couldn't even remember his name.
Yep, the Chinese dude.
Yeah. He is among those who take a strong stand on the biggest questions about the search for intelligent life in the universe.
We have our guest, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, right. Christina.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
Wonderful. Christina, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. I'm sorry about that little delay, but I'm here now. So
that's all right.
Better late than never is what I say. It's great to have you back on.
Oh, am I here?
Yes, yeah. You're here. You're on. You're live in front of me.
That's what I thought. I didn't know what you meant. I got you back on. I was like, did I drop? Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. I am not as good at this as Kathy is. She probably would have told you you were on live. I didn't even think about it. I'm horrible.
Oh, no, I realized it. I just was keeping quiet till you were ready for it. So.
That's Todd Fortin.
When all else fails, blame Batman.
That's right. Poor Todd. He gets the blunt of everything.
I'm just taken out, aren't I?
Somebody gets pissed off. Let's call Todd up.
I know it.
if I was you, I'd get your phone number changed. I seriously would. And I'd just lay like, oh, that phone's ringing again. Jesus Christ.
Get rid of it all.
Now let's roll on with this. We were talking about life on other planets and the probability of there being life on other planets, and I do agree with the statistically showing that, you know, the probability factors out there that, you know, there has to be something else out there.
Well, I would agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure that what people are seeing now with all the grays and the various things are actually aliens from another planet. I have sort of the time traveler hypothesis, the parallel universe hypothesis. So I wouldn't think that they'd be from another solar system because of the difficulty in traveling from another solar system. I'm more of a they're from another dimension type of thinker.
Yeah, that absolutely could be true, because, I mean, it's, you know, if you think about, you know, stuff that's in the physical world, you know, if we're just talking about the physical world by itself, you know, there's that possibility on its own is endless, but, you know, then you go to the other dimensions, and, you know, you're going completely into a whole, you don't know what you're getting into there. Are there as many dimensions as there are planets and universes, planets and solar systems out there?
Well, precisely, and ufologists deliberately get rid of alien encounters that are too paranormal, let's say. If they don't fit the mold of the abduction or anything, then they're dismissed. In Russia, they've been having experiences through the 80s and 90s with aliens that are 9 feet tall, look like robots in boxes, and then wink out like a television set. And they've got tons of these reports. There are lots of them here. Aliens showing up and making people mud cakes and leaving. Just this, these absurdities. But ufologists throw them away. So it's interesting how even people in the paranormal field get rid of things that don't fit our perception. So
yeah, exactly. And it's, and you know, it, we are a hard lot to convince on some stuff, you know. And it's I mean, I'm hard to convince when that everything's paranormal. Man, they need to go round and round about this every time a door shuts or something in the house. She's like, "Oh my god, what was that?" And I was like, "Just calm down. It was a door shutting. It's not a ghost." You know, and I have to everything. It's, you know, I know I get on her nerves, but you know.
That's only because he's always the one, the first one to say that wasn't a ghost. So, you know,
but you're the first
I'm assuming he's the first one who's thinking about it.
No, it's because I know how your train of thought is. It's like every time a door shuts, you get that look on your face like, what was that? And I'm like, oh, just calm down. It was not a ghost. It was the wind. But it's, but we're just like.
Yeah, I take the time to get the look on my face and think about it.
No.
I somehow feel
like I've walked in on something. I
should know. working then, yes. But yeah, it's but it, you know, it, they are hard to convince. But that's one area that's not hard to convince me on is the UFO part of it, because that right there is something that, you know, you see something that's unidentified up in space, and it's, you know. Yeah, it could be something else, but we've actually seen stuff here in the sky, just out sky watching, go across the head. There was not a shooting star, you know, change directions and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it's not satellites. It's, you get these glimpses of stuff, but we, you know, can't get that proof down that the people have to see. You know, and if somebody does come with that concrete proof, they're gonna be like, "Oh, that was fake. This is not real." You know, so you face a double-edged sword every time you turn around. If you're looking for UFOs, Bigfoot, anything, it's, you know, it, even if you take your personal experiences with it, you know, nobody can debunk my personal experiences, and or anybody's. Everybody's personal experiences is their own personal thing. But it's, you know, any kind of concrete evidence we bring of, like I said, a UFO, Bigfoot, you know, Jersey Devil, anything, somebody's going to be there to debunk it, and someone will call it fake. And if it, they can't call it fake, if it's been proven not to be photoshopped or something, there's still going to be somebody somewhere saying that you have found some way to fake this.
Precisely. It's faked is the last resort of the skeptic. I mean, that's their last option when they can't argue in any other way, is it's faked. That's when you know you've got their back to the wall. And that you're right.
I'm guilty of using that one before, so. I can't say that. I can't come out and start a, I have no rebuttal of that, so.
Well, it's, you
know, maybe it ain't does.
There are things that are fake, but let's say I just worked with another group and we videotaped a walkthrough, and I got some really unbelievable hits. Even I jaw dropped. But the last resort of people when they see that is you faked it. You looked stuff up ahead of time. I was blindfolded for an hour on the way there. How the heck did I research a place I didn't even know where the hell I was?
Yeah.
I had to pee with a blindfold on, damn it. I want my kudos.
There you go. Exactly. We'll give them to you here.
She faked it. It's all fake. Well, you know, that's what skeptics have left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some things are faked, but when you hit them with everything else and answer all of their objections, and that's all they've got left, you know, you've got something there.
And I keep telling Anita that I'm like, I don't know what you would call me. I guess I'm a skeptical believer and all that. And then, you know, I'm major on debunking everything and getting in there. And it's, you know, you've got all these different people. There's people who are absolute believers that everything has, you know, some element of paranormal or supernatural, or, you know, from another planet or something like that. And then I guess you got the, I would say I was in the middle somewhere, more of a critical thinker or something. But then you get the people who are just, it don't matter what you bring to them, tell them, you know, your best friend or whatever, you can tell them, hey, you know, I had this personal experience. They're just not going to believe it for anything. They're just going to, you know, chunk it aside. And it's, you know, I think that's why we're not any closer to finding answers, because everybody's just really resides in those three categories, and they don't really, you know, it's the people who think too much or don't think enough, and it's, you know, us, we people in the middle here, so.
That's true. You know, when I go on to, I read the Skeptical Inquirer. It's written by SciSoft, which is this group that debunks everything. They call it pseudoscience, anything that studies what you can't see, hear, taste, smell, or touch. And I was reading them, and they were debunking miracles. Well, they were debunking silly miracles, you know, the bleeding painting in the Ukraine and stuff like that. And I'm like, guys, what? I've never seen you look at Lourdes, where there's one woman who had detached retinas and can see with detached retinas. Her problem isn't cured, but she can see. And another guy who grew a new leg bone. These are the 70s and 80s. Debunk that. You know, but they don't touch that stuff. They just, oh, that's fake. Well, okay, examine the cases and show me how it was fake. No, it's just all fake. But let's talk about the image of Mary on the underpass. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
What I don't understand. I mean, I can see how those things could be considered to be paranormal, but I don't understand why those are considered to be miracles. I mean, maybe I'm missing something, but to me, a miracle is not, you know, some weird fluid coming out of an inanimate object. It's, you know, when you are crossing the road and a bus slams on its brakes to avoid hitting you and stops an inch away from you, to me that's a miracle.
Oh,
or you
fall
asleep at the wheel and you realize that you just made a curve that would have been impossible to, you would have been off the road and dead. To me, that's a miracle.
I absolutely agree. I mean, the miracle of life, when you consider that we just sit in little things of plastic and go 60 miles an hour with hundreds of other little things of plastic with four wheels. Yeah, when you consider the danger that we put ourselves in without even thinking at any point in our lives, it's not that you ask yourself, why do freak accidents happen? It's, why don't they happen more often?
You know? I was thinking about that the other day.
Yeah, why aren't people killed in these accidents more often than they are? I mean, we ask the opposite question sometimes. Why did this happen? Well, why doesn't it happen more often? You know, it's...
Well, see, I guess I think if, you know, if the bus slams on the brakes and don't hit you, that's not the miracle part. The miracle part would be if you got hit by the bus and it was going 100 miles per hour and you fly up 200 feet and you get up without a scratch. That's the miracle part. You know, if you just, you know, if the bus stops in front of you, you just got lucky.
You go by a cape, you go out there, you save the world after that happens. That's right. Like that guy,
the miracle to you now.
Stories, you know. Remember that guy, the window washer, who fell off the skyscraper and he survived?
Yeah.
I mean, he was messed up, but he survived. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's a bad day when you fall off of a skyscraper right there. I mean, it's, you know, we're talking about how the day sucked, but, you know, you come across these guys that fall off a skyscraper, get creamed by a bus and fly 500 feet and... Oh, well, how was your day? My boss was being kind of a jerk. Well, yeah, I fell off the skyscraper. Huh? Well, it sounds like you had a bad day.
What about the poor guy whose car he fell on, you know? It's just
wow.
A bad day all around. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know how I'd react to that. You're just standing there looking at your car and some dude just falls out of the sky and hits your car. I'm like, oh, my God. Who's having the worst day there, you know?
I'm just gonna keep on walking.
Yeah.
That's not my car, no.
Dude, if you survive that, you can have the damn car. I'm going home.
Exactly.
But it's like, yeah, I was thinking about that the other day. I was thinking about how you just sitting around looking at all the cars around. It's like, you know, how are people not getting killed left and right out here?
Well, exactly. I mean, there's so many questions out there. There are so many things out there where we're asking wrong questions. And if we could just shift our paradigm enough to ask a different question, then all of a sudden things open up. But I'm afraid a lot in the paranormal, I've seen a lot of paranormal investigators who are just as close-minded as the people they attack, and you find that in a lot of fields. You know, people attack each other and they just become close-minded. Oh, we were talking about UFOs. Jacques Vallée, if you remember Close Encounters of the Third Kind, that Frenchman who is walking around, that was based on him. He's a UFO researcher of 60 years now. He began his career as an astrophysicist in an astronomy, in a giant telescope. He was with colleagues, and they found a UFO, and the data printed out from the computer proving the existence of something flying in space, and they shredded it. And he looked at them and said, "What are you doing?" And they said, "We've got lots of these. They're career killers. Don't touch it."
Oh, and wow.
That just blew his mind. And he started searching from there. You'll be surprised at how much there is out there that people hide for fear of being called crazy. I mean, I was a psychic medium. I stayed in the closet till I was 37.
Yeah,
you gotta hide these things. It's not like you didn't think I was weird when you met me. It's not like I was hiding it well, but I kept that out of fear. So there's just so much fear of being perceived as weird, when the weird thing is that we're not seeing all the weirdness. You know, we're just so blind to it. So it's just interesting.
It is interesting, and you got to wonder about some of this stuff going on like that. I mean, out of this day, remember, it wasn't too long ago about the local news saying something about they have caught some kind of signal coming from outer space. And they were talking about it and said, "We're going to talk about it after we get back here," and they never talked about it. They never mentioned it again. I mean, I was sitting there thinking, like, oh, man, this is awesome. Let's hear what they got to say. And they never mentioned it again. I actually called the news station, and they said that we decided not to run with that show, not to run with that story. And I was like, you know, well, you know, you sit there and say, you get me excited and say, you know, you caught something coming from outer space that wasn't a, you know, human contact, and it's, you want to jerk that out from under people. I mean, do they think people are going to think they're crazy, or are they actually trying to hide something from us?
Oh, they got a phone call. That's how that works. They got a phone call or a visit.
Yeah, because it never came on, and I was like, sit there glued to the TV. It's like, I've got to hear this, and I actually got the DVR and recorded it, and it never came on. And it was like, oh my God, you know, it's, you know, you just can't tease somebody like that and jerk it out from under them, you know. I just always had wondered about that, that they really not want anything to be found out, or if somebody said, look, we're going to look like a bunch of idiots, we need to pull this story fast. So, you know, you get a lot of stuff like that, and you don't know the conclusion of it, so you don't really, you know what to think. And it's, you know, I think from the skeptical mind, they're really, you know, just, you know, they want to be, it's just like the believer and the skeptic, they're actually, you know, a lot alike. Because they're not going to take, you know, the believer's not going to take the time to say, you know, this could be something else or something, you know, there could be an explanation behind this. And then the skeptic's going to say, it don't matter what kind of explanation you give me, this is not real. So they're both trying to prove, you know, different ends of their point. So they're always going to clash heads. That's why, you know, I always encourage people, you know, do some critical thinking. You know, just because you say something's not real doesn't make you a non-believer. You know, I mean, I'm don't know how many times I've got accused of being an atheist when I'm just against organized religion. You know, and I just, you say something about this, and it's like, oh, God, you must be an atheist. Da, 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 da. I was like, no, I believe in a higher power. I believe in, you know, something, unseen forces watching over us in the galaxy, but I just don't believe that it's all summed up in one book. You know, and that's, but, you know, you don't believe the people that call me an atheist, or, you know, the even insulted by atheists, saying, you know, it's, well, there's nothing out there, you know, you're just, you know, believing in something that's not even there. And it's, you know, you get it from both ends. So I've seen it from both ends, and I've been a victim of it from both ends. So it's kind of a weird thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I actually have run into some prejudice because of my paranormal work in my professional work. Because I run a corporation, I'm an assessment expert. I write standardized tests and textbooks. And I had a client who was excited to have me because after 14 years, I'm one of maybe a few people in the field who's done it all. And he introduced me, and one of his tutors Googled me and said, "You can't use her." Why? Because she's studying the paranormal. And I just, that had never happened before. But I've only, again, come out of a closet recently, and I realized, oh, crap, I'm going to have to deal with this. You know, and I've already gotten tons of love letters on the church's webpage because I admit, you know, I don't use the term psychic medium. They're gifts of the Holy Spirit, but that's what it is. It's the same thing. It's just different terms. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got love letters, you're of Satan, you're of this, and I'm like, the difference is, though, that I actually have a master's in theology, and if you want to throw down with me, you're going to be hurt in unit, but it's just like, there's so much stuff happening out there from every spectrum. I mean, as far as the paranormal goes, from... oh my gosh, we were talking about the stigmata once online. You've got all these religious issues coming. Then you've got the hauntings. Then you've got cryptozoology. I mean, there was even a talking muskrat in England in the 1800s that drew tons of attention. The weirdest things happen in the world, and nobody, you know, nobody talks about them or remembers them.
Yeah, that stuff's it's, you know, and that satanic panic has been going on for, you know, a lot of people say for years. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people say, well, it really started back in the 70s. But if you look at it, from you know, any perspective, it's been going on since the 1500s.
Oh yeah,
you know, even BC. You know, that satanic panic's always been there.
Yeah, it's always an issue. It always comes up. I mean, Satanism goes back past Christianity. It's a Jewish entity, and it you know, evolved. But yeah, it's been going on for ages. But there was, remember that scare? There was a series of scares in the 90s with daycare centers, where there were satanic issues and the kids were part of ritual abuse. And it was all these daycares, and one of them was exonerated, and then poof, it disappeared. And when you get that, like you said, the poof disappear from the media, you start to wonder, well, what happened? Was it really happening? What was the issue? And then you have to do some digging that sometimes you're not able to do.
Yeah, exactly, and it's you got to dig into that, and it's, you know, I guess it all, you know, flared back up in the 70s, and you know, it's, you know, the whole satanic panic started with the back up in the 70s with the Exorcist and things like that, and you know, then the heavy metal music, all that was the big satanic thing.
Yeah, I remember all that. Everybody wants to blame. It's just like in the paranormal. The second you say the word demon, your ratings go up by 50%. Everybody wants to hear about that. There's the human mind has a fascination with evil. Evil to us is, it's just this, it's enticing. You know, there's just this romantic love of it. Think about it. How many stories revolve around the broken hero, the evil redeemed hero from Twilight to anything else? Yeah. And then you also have things like when Milton wrote Paradise Lost, where Jesus has all of his soliloquies and Lucifer has his. Everybody says, every critic, that Lucifer got better lines.
Yeah, exactly.
He can say the coolest things. I mean, good is so restricted to a certain type of vocabulary and language and so much stricture. Evil has no stricture. And no. So it's so much more interesting to us.
Exactly. And it's, and I mean, the good guys only, you know, is the hero at the end and all that, but a lot of people find themselves in the ends pulling for the bad guy now, and it's, you know, I guess that's kind of the feeling that some people get when they listen to heavy metal music. They get out there and, you know, listen to some Iron Maiden or some Black Sabbath or something, they feel like, oh, yes, it's, you know, speaking of evil, and it just, you know, when you listen to stuff like that, you know, it's, you know, a lot of people will look at that and view it as evil, but really you're looking at, when you look at the lyrics and stuff like that, you know, those are a couple of the bands just to mention, you know, the big Satanic Panic thing were about them and all that. And when you actually get to the core of their songs, it's not really as much about devil and Satan worship as it is mythology and all that.
Well, right. And there's people are so fascinated by evil, I think, and that sort of thing, because there's an overt power about it. A lot of people view goodness, the power, let's say, inherent in being a really, really good, powerful person, because there's a humility to it. That's hard. It's so easy to be evil. I mean, in fact, it's so easy to be screwed up. We're all like two or three decisions away from living in a box under a bridge somewhere. I mean, when you think about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you want to work to real power, like real goodness through humility, it's a lot of work. And I could go that way and have the same power. Yeah. So it, and people don't do it. I'm not saying they do it, but the fascination with it, the 50 Shades of Grey thing, I don't understand. I'm a writer. I write English grammar questions. I read 5 pages and said, I cannot slog through this. I just can't. It's
exactly
awful.
And there's just no interest in that. There's no, I mean, it's, you know, to me it's like you're living someone else's fantasy or something like that. When people read stuff like that, it's really not, you know, to me it's kind of it's just not doing anything good for your mind. You're not really putting any good information or, you know, actually going on a real adventure in your mind, and that you're just, you know, living someone else's fantasy when you could be actually, you know, learning something, learning a new trait, or, you know, hearing a real story that really happened to somebody, or hearing some kind of a mystery that's not been solved or something like that. You know, it really gets to the, you know, I think that's what you really absorb stuff off of. And you just, you know, when you're reading a fantasy or something, you're not really, you know, doing anything good for your body, your mind, your soul. You're not really learning anything new or anything like that.
Well, for me, I read mostly nonfiction, these huge theological scripture books, because I like them. I'm sick. I admit that. But I also just tend toward the mind candy. You know, I loved Twilight. I loved Hunger Games. I loved Harry Potter, although that's not as much mind candy. It was a much different writing style. But when, you know, I opened the book to 50 Shades of Grey, I was like, this is awful prose, but that character is compellingly diabolical. And I bet you that's what kept people going. You know, if you want to sell a novel, create a really good bad guy. You don't have a plot. You just need a really good bad guy.
Yeah, and it's the villains have always carried every kind of story that there has been, and it's like, no matter how good the hero was or how interesting they were, where they came from, it's, you know, the people, even the heroes in the movies and the books and all that, they're not even a, you know, completely clean soul. You know, they come from a, you know, dirty background. It's kind of like the heroes in the movie Sin City. You know, they're good guys. They're fighting something that's worse than them, but they're, you know, not good guys in the sense for any reason. And you really get into the heroes in that movie just because they have that bad vibe to them, but they're just, you know, there's something just worse than them. But even the stuff that's worse than them, it's almost, in that situation, that's where the hero carries the, you know, carries the torch in those movies. And it's, you know, that's why it's one of my favorite movies, because that's actually a movie where the actual villain is portrayed as the good guy, and they still, you know, in the end it all works out. And that's what it's...
No, you're exactly right. That's, we love, rottenness and brokenness so much that even our heroes are villains. I mean, look at, like, the show House, where you've got this drug addict misanthrope running around yelling at people, but he's the hero, and everybody loves that show. Why?
Exactly.
Because the hero is the rotten guy.
Yeah, exactly.
We just love people who are a little bit redeemed, more like us. Not the perfect hero, just a little more like us. And I think that's why when in the paranormal, you go into a home, and this is for the unethical investigator, you go into a home, the people there, if you debunk it, you think they'd feel better, but they really don't a lot of times, you know.
No.
Even if they didn't want anything there, you know, they don't feel good. If you go in and say it's a good ghost, they're disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? Exactly. They want to feed off of that negativity. And we were talking about that earlier. It's every time you turn on the news or something, all that you're getting pumped full of is negativity. And these people actually do not want their problems solved. They don't want to hear it's nothing's going on here or it's something good. They just, you know, they want to feed off of that negativity and get, they want so bad for something bad to be there. I mean, what kind of doors does that open for something bad to actually be there?
Exactly. I think that deep down, and this is absolutely true, I kind of study this, deep down, every person wants to be distinguished in some way. Now, if you remember the movie The Graduate with Mrs. Robinson, who has an affair. Well, Anne Hathaway was talking in an interview about 15 years later about the character of Mrs. Robinson, and they said, you know, how much did you enjoy playing that character? And she said, not at all. That character terrified me. And they said, why? And she said, she's this woman who gave up all of her dreams and then wakes up one day and she's middle-aged and she's ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, that terrified me. And I think that there's a drive for all of us to not be ordinary in any way. And if we can be, it's what St. Paul says in Scripture, you know, oh, you think you're a big sinner? I'm a bigger sinner than all of you. You know, it's like, if I can't be known for being good, I'm going to be known for being bad.
That's right.
So people want to be distinguished, and there's almost a sort of celebrity to, why did the bad thing pick me? I must be enticing. And so that's what people have in their head.
Mm-hmm,
and
exactly.
That causes problems for we who go into the home to try and help them.
Yeah, and I've always been really, you know, since I've been into this, you know, I've been an enthusiast all my life. I've been, you know, doing investigations for, you know, 14, 15 years now, you know, and for me, it was all about getting in there, helping people out. I know what I went through, and I know how I felt. And I was, when I started doing my own research, because there was no teams when I got into this and I went through what I went through, there was no teams around at all. You know, to me, a paranormal team was these dudes that was on that movie, The Entity, that had these humongous computers that come rolling them into your house and was all sitting around, and it cost, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to have them sitting around. So I was kind of just left to do what I had to do by myself. And when I started looking into what was going on there, and I realized, even though I did experience something, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. And that, you know, I found comfort in that. But, you know, if you put somebody in that situation these days, and you had an actual good, legit team that went there and disproved half of the stuff that they, you know, were believing was paranormal, and you do that, and it's, you know, instead of them feeling relieved like I did, you know, thank God the dust is not orbs or ghosts or whatever, you know, when it's, you know, you've got a sense of relief of that, they are actually irritated, mad, think you don't believe them, and the whole nine, and they just really want to take that down the negative path. And, you know, and if they pump that negativity out there, what are they going to get in return? If there's something that is actually there, how much energy is that going to pump into what is there? And stuff's really going to start happening.
Well, exactly. We talk often in exorcism circles about the invitation. And a lot of people, at first, they're just so... If an entity is there, even if it's good, there's this sort of feeling of being special, that it chose me. And that's how it gets in, because... You know, even negative entities can disguise themselves as good entities. It says, you know, the ancient story that Satan can appear as an angel of light because that's what he was. And so, you know, these negative entities appear as good ones, and the invitation is almost immediate in us because we want that. We want to be chosen. We want the letter from the owl to show up when we're 8 years old telling us we're really a wizard, because we all feel a little out of place wherever we are. And so when that doesn't happen and that entity shows up, you immediately allow it when your first reaction should be, no, you need to go now.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you a quick story. This was so funny. When I started doing this, I chose this house that I'm living in right now because no one's ever died here. The first owners lived here 30 years, sold it to us when they retired, and it was not haunted. I walked through it, nothing here, boom, we could buy this one. Because I grew up in a haunted house, and having the gifts that I have, those damn things follow me everywhere. So we get in this house, it's nice and comfortable. I can go into any area of this house in the dark and feel very, very comfortable. Then I start doing paranormal investigations as a medium, and then things start showing up. And I was in bed one night. I was asleep. I was dreaming. And in my dream, I was talking to someone, and something smacked me 3 times on the top of my head in the dream. And then I woke up feeling it hitting me and, like, running off of my bed, fall onto the floor, because it hit me so hard that I woke up out of a dream. You know, people say, oh, you were falling asleep and dreaming. No, I was dreaming, and it woke me up out of the dream. And I just kind of shook my head, laid back down, and then the bed shakes a little. And then I'm ignoring it. I roll on my back, and then I hear Christina from my bathroom. And I get up, and I start yelling. I was like, you are not allowed to come in my bedroom. Any of you who are here right now and did that, you're banished. I will not help you. And I said, now, if you're going to stop screwing around, I'll help you in the morning, but you're not allowed in here. And so it was just like, I have to set boundaries with them because they're like little kids. And I said to them once, I'm like, you're dead. What do you have to worry about? I'm not dead. I need to sleep. You need to go away.
Yeah, we'll be dead more if I'm getting to sleep.
Oh, my gosh. But, you know, at first, there was this, for most people, having that experience, there's this flush of excitement. But for me, there's just get the hell out. Because, well, it's not new to me. But also, I don't want to even suggest that that's okay. To any entity to come into my bedroom, that's a sacred space for me. I pray there, I sleep there, I read there, it's my escape. So, no, you can't come in there.
Exactly.
And that's what other people need to do.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I don't know how many times I've, you know, laid in here before, and it arrived here, you know, when I was here by myself at night, and I could sense something was going on, but, you know, and I actually got scared of it, and I was like, you know, I actually go out and look for this stuff, and now it's happening in my bedroom, and I don't want it to happen. And it's, I just thought that was always kind of a weird concept, but it's, you don't want to get more back into this in the second half here, because it's, you know, I actually lived in a house where I had some experiences at that was, there was nobody that ever lived there but my family, but there was a few experiences that happened there. But we're going to take a short break now, and we're going to have you some news from Brian Whiteley. We will be back with Christina Rake, Anita Brown, myself. We shall be back here very shortly.
Don't go away.
Welcome to Sideshow Radio News, SSRN, on this spectacular Tuesday night. I'm your Sideshow Radio News anchor, Brian Lee Watley. Your center stage news stories are about Oscar's Very Weird Night, the weird science programs at Zombie Robot Sparrows to Kill, horse meat found in pizzas, and Defense Department spends billions on weird research. Our first story tonight is Oscar's Very Weird Night. Yes, it's our picks for the highlights and many, many lowlights from one of the oddest Oscars in years. And this is brought to us by Mary Elizabeth Williams, Sunday, February the 24th. And you can find this on Salon.com. As Academy Award nominee Abraham Lincoln once said, nearly all men can stand adversity. But if you want to test a man's character, give him power. The Oscars are our annual endurance test of both. It's the Olympics of show business power, a cage match whose outcome determines future developmental deals and stratospheric salaries. And for the viewer at home, however, somewhere around the third or fourth or fifth or 600th hour of ill-advised musical numbers, it tends to deteriorate into a trial of audiences' stamina and fortitude. And so the show's organizers have in recent years flailed about our eyes before to make the evening's proceedings a less grim broadcast, bringing on James Franco and Anne Hathaway in hopes of making it a dewy, youthful affair, then turning around and trotting out Billy Crystal with the promise of the balm of the reassuringly familiar. Well, here within, then, our most memorable moments of a show that will go down in history as the time the awards gave over its power to Stewie Griffin, and the adversity that followed. So, one of the parts is the lengthy, desperate ADHD opening, and apparently unable to nail down a concept with which to kick off the show, should he be devilishly offensive, surprisingly traditional? McFarlane and company decided to go with a whole lot of everything. And there was not two terrible monologues, followed by the venerable Captain Kirk himself butting in to call McFarlane tasteless and inappropriate, followed by a hearty har har, we saw your boobs, ode to notify, that included Hollywood Gay Men's Choir, followed by a straight-faced Charlize Theron and Channing Tatum dancing to Just the Way You Look Tonight, followed by a reenactment of Flight with sock puppets, followed by Daniel Radcliffe and Joseph Gordon-Levitt doing High Hopes, and capped by our guests, yes, 13 minutes in, and the world looked wearily as it watched and poured itself another drink. What about the Life of Pi's win for visual effects? It was surprisingly when, instead of the usual subtle get-the-heck-off-the-stage music, the orchestra instead let the audience know tonight it would drown out winners with the ominous theme from Jaws. But when the film's team steadfastly persevered to acknowledge the extreme financial difficulties of effects house Rhythm and Hues, the microphone went completely dead, and then the screen then cut to Nicole Kidman, looking at once pitifying and aghast. Not just tacky, it's just downright mean. What about the Les Miserables makeup and hair win? And we thought Helena Bonham Carter was our only source of insane satirical choices. Thank heaven, then, for a British woman in bright pink tights, eccentrically lives. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, those fabulous Bond ladies. For the culmination of a James Bond tribute, the 76-year-old Shirley Bassey didn't hit every note out of the park, but swaggering through the best Bond theme ever in her shiny gown, she still brought down the house as only she can, and she made millions of home viewers join in with the whole finale, or two of their own, and later Adele brought her considerable vocal chops to a massively orchestral version of Skyfall, and generations apart, the Bond girls brought the night's most chivalry musical drama. Well, that between the time warp tribute to movie musicals and the great night of Lucius Malfoy's Wannabes and the whole best supporting actress presentations to Her Name is Barbara. Yes, capping off the part of the show informally known as the Get Yourself Another Beer moments, the diva herself ended the immemorable tributes to her memories of The Way We Were. Well, it will never get campier or show busier than La La Strand. And paying off four decades of hypothetical speculation by singing If We Had the Chance to Do It All Again, Tell Me, Would We? What about Ang Lee? Oh yes, The Life of Pi. And things just got real with winner Jennifer Lawrence when she tripped up, climbing up to receive her award, and then cracked that you guys are just standing up because you feel bad that I fell. Yeah, that was actually it. And then it just got all surreal. It was peculiar enough when Jack Nicholson sauntered out to introduce the award for Best Picture, doing the world's sloppiest Jack Nicholson imitation, but when a dazzling Michelle Obama appeared via satellite to give a shout-out to Arts and Education and announced the award, you might have bet that it couldn't get stranger. Well, then, maybe DiAngelo had won. But then Argo winner Ben Affleck seriously ramped up the weird when he turned his acceptance speech into a rambling oration on how much hard work it takes to be married to Jennifer Garner. Okay. So, our next story tonight is Weird Science Programs Its Zombies to Zombie Robots That Sparrows to Kill. This brought to us by John Timmer on February the 24th, and you can find this on ArtsTechnica.com. Yeah, Angry Birds versus Robotic Zombies. There's so much weirdness here. I'm not even sure where to begin. First, there's the jargon-filled opening sentence signaling off involves complex suites of behaviors that incorporate different sensory modalities, and the sensory modality in question here, in visual, is that it involves a bird waving its wing around as part of a territorial dispute among sparrows. Now, this sounds like much ado about nothing. Be aware, the press release claims, the sparrows in question will sometimes fight to the death. But the real thing setting this paper apart is its technique. It took taxidermy sparrows and reanimated them with robotics to see how living sparrows would respond to them. And according to the PR, the live birds responded most aggressively to the invading wing-waving robotic sparrows, which Anderson, who was the lead researcher, said she expected. Clearly, she has formed expectations about things I have never expected to see happen. And this kind of makes me wonder. I wonder what the Duck Dynasty guys and the Beards with the Robertson brothers and sons, to see if they would actually make a robotic duck to help call ducks to call. I don't know. It's just a thought there. Our next story is Weird Story of the Day. Yes, horse meat found in pizzas. It's brought to us by the Associated Press on February the 24th, and you can find this on alopsotimes.com. In Copenhagen, Denmark, Danish authorities say that they will report a butcher in central Denmark to police for selling horse meat labeled as beef to local pizzerias. The Danish Veterinary and Food Administration chief investigator Michael Rosenmark said samples taken from packages of pizza meat produced by Harby Slaughterhaus showed they contained a mix of horse meat, pork, and beef. And the butcher in a village near Denmark's second largest city, Aarhus, markets itself as a local high-quality alternative to large consumptoriums and claims that the restaurants knew their product. Well, it contained horse meat, but Rosmar says the former employee at the butcher's supports the claim it has been misleading customers. And authorities across Europe stated doing random DNA checks on meat products after traces of horse meat turned up in frozen supermarkets' meals, such as burgers and lasagna, is a must. Well, and for show notes for that one, you know, maybe it just tastes like chicken. Anyway, that was my horse impersonation. As good as that gets. All right, our next story is Defense Department spends billions on weird research. Brought to us by Brianna Inley from the Fiscal Times on February the 24th. Read more at thefiscaltimes.com. And first, the title should tell you all. Defense Department spends billions on weird research. Well, it is the Defense Department. Have you ever wondered what fish can teach us about democracy, or how well babies interact with robots, or contemplated the color of the feathers of that very first birds? The Defense Department spends billions of dollars in research each year attempting to answer these and other arcane questions. And here's just a few of them. Beef jerky by the sheet. Yes, the Pentagon is breaking into the meat market by using funds from weapons research programs to develop its brand of beef jerky. The Foreign Commercial Trade Test Program has spent $1.5 million to produce a beef jerky roll-up that, according to the Pentagon, can be consumed as a savory snack or used as filling for a shelf-stable sandwich. And it's great for war-fighting capabilities. Well, considering I've had MREs for a whole year in Iraq and for 14 years serving in the military, beef jerky just isn't that bad. So, okay, let's go on to the next one. What about coffee break smartphone apps? So, not sure if you're ready for your afternoon cup of coffee? Not to worry, thanks to the Pentagon, there is now an app for that. The DoD funded research for the development of an iPhone app intended to help people manage their caffeine consumption to suit their lifestyles. According to Coburn's report, all you have to do is input the type of caffeinated beverages you consumed and it will calculate your recommended caffeine levels for the next 24 hours. Problem is, two were already invented. Okay, let's take a look at this. Birds of a black feather? Yes, the Air Force Office of Science Research, AFOSR, funded a $300,000 study by Brown University to identify the color of the first prehistoric bird. It was black. How about interstellar space travel? The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency launched the 100-year Starship effort aimed at making interstellar space travel possible and feasible within the next century. So far, DARPA has spent over $600,000 to facilitate a space travel enthusiast community, including $100,000 workshops that have spawned such discussion as what kind of attire interstellar space explorers should don on their expeditions. And finally, for the DoD spending of weird research is robots and children. The DoD spent $450,000 to study the interaction between babies and robots, where researchers observed a group of 18-month-old babies' individual interactions with a robot named Morphe from 2009 to 2012. I guess that's better than a robot Sparrow. If you have any local items or events you would like mentioned, please contact SideshowRadio@live.com. Attention Sideshow Radio News. That's all for Sideshow Radio News. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your news anchor, Brian Lee Watley, reporting from Mobile, Alabama. Come check me out at BrianLeeWatley.com. And this has been your Sideshow Top News, and it's time for the curtain call.
You're listening to Parachallenged Radio with your host, PC, a Jackalope Radio production.
All right, we're back with Parachallenged Radio.
No! Sideshow Radio Spectacular.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Damn it.
Yeah.
Damn.
that's what we get for letting you do the intro, see?
I messed it all up.
Jesus Christ.
I know. I was sitting here trying to get the dang... It was going, and all of a sudden, it told me, 22 seconds. All of a sudden, it went, boom, 5 seconds. I went, what the hell kind of
oh, man. Oh, Jesus. Well, at least we could blame Todd again.
Yeah, it's wonderful, wonderful.
The Sideshow Spectacular, where you can get your circus on.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, man. But, you know, anyway, we're back with Anita. Christina Rake, we're going to get into a little bit of the stuff Christina's been into this year. She's done some clearings and a minor exorcism even. So why don't you tell us what you've been up to with that stuff?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm a bishop in my denomination, but that was more recent. Before that, I did, I don't like to call it faith healing. I didn't know that I could do this until I was in my 20s, and I had some experiences where I sort of, you know, would touch someone or knew that I could help them, and when I did, they got better, and I was shocked. Someone I was with whom I loved had a rotavirus, and there was a child, and he couldn't breathe, and he'd been in and out of the hospital, and I just hugged him, and I left, and by the time I was home, they couldn't believe it. His oxygen levels were at 100%. And so this, I can't explain what it is that I do, but I do it, and it's like an electrical freight train running through me. Mm-hmm. But we had a couple of experiences where I was in this spiritual group. It was religious, and we would talk about scripture readings or some spiritual topics and stuff. And at the end, we started healing prayer. And one of the people there was going into surgery 2 weeks later because they had found a cyst in her ovary, a very big one, and they were concerned about it was hurting her. While we were praying, something came over me, and I walked over to her, put my hand on there, said, "Hold still," and just did what I do. She started, wincing. She said it felt like I was ripping something out of her, and then it stopped.
Oh, wow.
Her ear was warm and red. A week later, I heard from her. They took a second x-ray before surgery, and it was gone.
And oh, wow.
So that's the sort of thing that was happening to me. And while this is happening to me and all new, there was a man in our group who is this promoter type of person. I love him to death, but he's just, he's an interesting character. But he started bringing people there for me. I told them, don't tell anyone, because I don't want, my husband always told me, never let anyone know about this, because I don't want tents on the front lawn. And, but this guy's bringing people, and I would pray over them. And, you know, people who had bladder cancer, gone. People who had pinched nerves in their back, gone. Depression, gone. Troubles getting pregnant, gone. And it was the strangest thing. It was a very weird time in my life. But while we were doing it, I found that you can't do that apart from boundaries and ethics and just an extreme amount of care. Because if someone says to someone who's desperate, I know someone who can heal you or cure you, and then the hope gets crushed, that if all they have is hope, it's just going to kill them. So I was always careful to tell people, I don't know when it's going to work and it's not. I really don't. And healing isn't curing, and I'm not the one doing it. It's someone... Mm-hmm. Me, so you know, you have to understand, if nothing happens, then it's not your fault. You know, but there are people out there, these psychic healers, who want your adoration and love. I think of Benny Hinn. I don't know if you've ever watched one of his shows, but he's his fist, like he's throwing the force at people and they're falling down. And
I've actually seen a video of him where they did the drowning pool bodies, that song, let the bodies hit the floor, and he was like actually going up to hit healing people. It was really funny, and they were like hitting the ground. And you know, I never really believed anything he did. You know, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, if they put the power of suggestion into somebody that hard, some of them may have got healed through that. But you know,
and that's where, for me, anything that I've ever been involved with, I need hardcore evidence, or I don't believe that anything happened.
Like, yeah.
I shot films and said, oh, the pain is gone and there's nothing there, but I knew something was there. I'd tell her, nah, nothing was there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I had one situation. I was working at the church, and the receptionist called me, and she's like, Christina, I have a woman here who wanted your number. She needs to talk to you. I don't want to give her your number, but she won't leave. <It's> like, all right, put her on. And she's a friend of mine. You have the power of God. And I said, first, I don't have the power of God, and no, I can't heal. But I will pray for people if they need it. My friend is in the hospital. She wants you to pray for her. Okay. So I meet this woman, and I go, and her friend in the hospital bed was the skeleton, and it turns out that cancer had moved. She had a brain tumor and moved through her body.
Oh,
and,
wow.
It was a very sad moment to be there. I worked for hospice while I was in college, so I always visited people who were in the process of dying. It wasn't disconcerting, it was just sad. But I sat there in the corner, I didn't touch her or anything, and I prayed for her. And she woke up, and this woman who had dragged me there brought her over and said, this is the healer I told you about. And the woman said, I told you I didn't want anyone to come. And I just was horrified. I would never have done it without permission. And I apologized to her, and she could barely talk, but she smiled at me, and she said, thank you for coming. And I'm like, my God, even on her deathbed, this woman is gracious. So I went home. I talked to her friend for a while, convincing her that God can, you know, heal people with doctors and medicine. You don't need witch doctors. You don't need those women from the Ukraine that you go see. You can go to a hospital. They're trying to, you know, inject some rationality into her, and also convince her that her friend who is Baptist is not going to hell because she's not Roman Catholic. So, you know, I spent a lot of time with her. And it was probably more for her than her dying friend that I was there. But anyway, I swear to God, it was a year later, I get a card in the mail from someone, and I don't know the name or anything, and I open it. And this woman explains that my friends have recently told me that you visited me in the hospital when I was very, very ill. And she gave the name, and I went, oh my gosh, it was the woman in the hospital. And she said, it's a year later, and I'm cancer-free.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Blown away by that, because she did not have long. When I don't know the specifics of her case, but I've seen people dying, and you can tell their aspect changes.
Yeah.
She was on the edge between here and the next place, but I was just so happy. I just started crying, and I'll never see her again. And I haven't seen her since that time in the hospital, but it was just such a wonderful news, you know? So I've had forays into that, and like I said, I always tell people, please understand that sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, and I can't mm-hmm. tell you why, except to let you know that it's never your fault and it's not something you did.
Exactly. You know, you get
jackasses who are like, you didn't believe hard enough, and I swear to God, I know that I'm a woman of God, but if they come near me, I will kick their ass.
Yeah.
Don't.
Yeah, and that hasn't been the worst thing you can do to somebody. Just pass the blame down to them, because it's, you know, like you said, where I have heard of these things actually happening, it's just a random thing going on. But, you know, and these people who, like, here's their effort for the admiration. They're just, you know, if they can't get it themselves, if it don't happen, they want to pass the buck to keep their name clean. So that's awesome. What you're doing, tell me, it only works, you know, every once in a while, or, you know, you have no control over if it works or not. So it's, you know, I admire that. That's awesome.
Oh, thank you. And I'll tell you, you know, remissions occur. And the fact that I visited her, and the world is very random, and it's very unfair, and God has nothing to do with that. It's all about choice. And you know, the fact that cancer exists and our DNA branches and breaks, you know, remissions happen. She may have gone into remission. She may have been at the end of an experimental treatment that worked. I don't know that, but I accept that. And if someone told me that, I'm like, oh, cool. You know, I'm just relating facts. I don't say I was the cause. I'm just joyful that I was part of it. I was part of someone who came back. And that's what made me cry when I got that note, that I could see her and that she was still here. And it was just a wonderful thing to know. So, you know, you really have to be very careful when you make claims that I can do this or I can do that. I always tell people, I am involved in this. This has happened in the past. But past performance in the paranormal is no expectation of future performance. So.
That's right.
I think that there's a higher power that determines when is our time and when is it. And I think that many people can be a catalyst to, you know, intercede and carry that decision through of, no, this is not your time yet. We have to fix this.
Oh, that's really neat. I love the way you said that. I hadn't thought about it that way. That's
and then
cool.
There's other times where, you know, no, it is your time. There's not going to be any catalyst. There is not going to be anything to fix this.
That's right. I had a near-death experience when I was 9. And when I'm on my deathbed and an old lady and someone brings a healer, I'm going to have a gun. Stay away from me. I want to go home. I'm tired.
Well, when my grandfather had cancer the first time, the prognosis was really bad. He had colon cancer, and it had, I can't ever say the word right, metastasized, is that it?
Yes.
In his liver. So they did not see him making it very long. And they, you know, they said, well, we can try chemo anyway. One round of chemo, and he was clear.
Oh, wow.
One round. And it was gone. I mean, they did the surgery to remove it from his colon, but they couldn't take out what was in his liver, and it melted away in one round.
Oh,
and Yeah, and his oncologist called him the Miracle Man.
Yeah.
And he went through his 5 years, you know, they get the 5-year clean bill of health.
Uh-huh.
And he had just gotten it in that September, or it might have been October, but anyway, by Christmas, you know, the girls and I went to see them and stay with them for Christmas, and we hadn't been able to do that for a little while, and he was all happy. And he was sitting there talking to me and telling me all of these stories that he had never told me before. Just little personal things about him, about this man who he used to take to work every day when no one else would take him because of his color. And how the man bought him new tires and how he would grow potatoes in the river. You know, just little things that I never knew in all of these years. And he looked around at all of us and he said, "I am just so glad that you guys are here because, you know, I don't think I'm going to have another Christmas to do this." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? You know, he just got his 5-year clean bill of health. This is the Miracle Man. You know, come on, what are you talking about?" And 5 months later, he began having symptoms. And they never really did quite say exactly how or where it came back because it was pointless. And he was gone within just 2 or 3 months of getting sick again.
Wow.
But he had decided that he was ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, he had said before the first round of chemo was done that first time, he said, "You know, if I have to do this again, if this doesn't cut it, I'm not doing this. I can't. I'm too tired. I'm too sick."
Yeah.
And that's what did it, which is amazing. You know, that one round did it. And, you know, it was like the next time around, he just decided it was time to go. And then it came back.
Wow. Well, see. Wow. Here's the real healing miracle. Here's how God works with these things. In the 1980s, like 1985, cancer was a death sentence. You had less than a 10% chance of living.
Right.
Now, you know, leukemia, you have an 80% chance of living. That's astonishing, and that's God working through people who have been studying and researching and donating and killing themselves to stop this horrible murderer, and bam, look at what we've done in just 30 years. So you want to talk about healing and miracles, that's the healing and miracle right there. It's
right.
Us. It's all of us working together to try and solve the problem. And when we do that, the most amazing things can happen.
But then on the flip side, and not to be a negative Nancy here, but, you know, there's always another side to the coin.
Right.
There's always, I believe, catalysts for other things as well. Other, I wouldn't want to call them higher powers, but other powers.
Right.
That don't have good intentions in mind, whatever they may be. And on the flip side of that, you know, where science and technology has helped create this miracle here, which I'm sure has had help from beyond, to fight it, on the other end of the spectrum, we have, you know, other human beings who work in laboratories and create weird foods and pesticides and all of the nasty things that we eat all of the time that is causing an increase in cancer and diabetes.
Right.
So it's odd to look at, you know, both sides of that coin there. And, you know, if you look at it in a wider, more spiritual perspective, it's almost like some kind of tug of war.
Right. And the tug of war happens because we're given gifts and we create things. We're moral agents. Everything is neutral until we make a decision to use it. You know, the knife that performs a tracheotomy on 11 and saves a knife is the same one on the second floor that commits a murder. You know, it's not the knife, it's the people.
Right.
And because we have free will and have our own gifts, those gifts are not taken away because we misuse them. And that's the hard part.
Right.
Technology isn't taken away because we misuse it. And that's the bad part. That's the dark part.
Right.
I agree with you. It is a tug of war, and that's just on the human level. I mean, when you think of the spiritual level, I believe in personified evil because I've seen it. I've fought it. It's attacked me. And since I was, 6 years old, I've had those things attacking me in my bed. And I'm not crazy. I mean, I lived in a haunted house, and something would hit me in my face so hard that I'd have a welt in the morning. Wow. And this would be in the middle of the night. And I used to sleep fully clothed, wake up at 3 a.m. It was always at 3 a.m. that I would wake up and then just sit vigil until the sun rose. I would not sleep during that time period because that was when it was dangerous as far as I was concerned. And I was like 7, 8, 9 years old. I mean, the fact that I knew that without knowing why was really weird.
Well,
but, I mean, what are you going to do?
A friend of mine from Ohio... It's odd that you mentioned the 3 a.m. thing, and I know that's been brought up in a lot of movies and paranormal shows, but then there is another real aspect to that. She would wake up when she had something in her home, and her daughter, who was, I believe, 11 or 12 at the time, would also wake up at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because anything was right there, it was just an instinct. They just immediately 3 a.m. they woke up, and things would feel really uneasy, and they would have a hard time going back to sleep because they just, it was something that triggered them to, hey, you need to get up right now.
Right. And you know, these, whether you believe these entities choose 3 a.m. or that, you know, we wake up at 3 a.m. thinking they're there, and they're always there, so we see them at 3 a.m. The reason 3 a.m. is important in spiritual and mythology circles is because it's the inversion of Christ's death at 3 p.m. So that's why 3 a.m. was always the witching hour, the hour of Satan. It wasn't midnight, it was 3 a.m. So that's why 3 a.m. plays such a huge part in paranormal and... evil sort of mythology.
Right.
Yeah,
and that
we
is
hear
proof
so much.
That,
go ahead.
I was just going to say that is proof that witches who do things at midnight are not worshiping Satan. I just thought I'd put that out there.
I love it.
But, you know, that whole satanic panic thing we were talking about earlier, it started when, you know, at the crest of all that's when, you know, The Exorcist and Amityville Horror come out, and we know in the Amityville, the story and the movie, it was, you know, they always seen the 3:15 a.m. thing. So I guess even before I knew exactly what that meant, you know, the whole 3 a.m. thing, after seeing that movie, and every time I ever woke up at 3:15, I always was always just absolutely freaked out. It was like, oh my God, the clock's 3:15. You know, and you're expecting to see the eyes outside the window at any second now.
I've done that before, too. If it's 3:15 and I've woke up, I'm up. I'm looking around like, okay, why did I wake up? Am I cold? Do I feel like I need to build a fire? Am I going to be okay?
Luckily, one year ago, I caught osteomyelitis in my jaw, which is a bone-eating infection. And I'm okay now. I'm getting better. But I take these massive muscle relaxers for the muscles, and I don't wake up until like 7. I fall asleep sitting upright on the couch with my phone in my hand, and then I wake up at 7 a.m., so I don't have problems anymore at 3 a.m. Those demons could come and start rapping me in the head, and I'd be like, huh? Go back to sleep. But, I've had so many experiences with them that, you know, I will talk to people who are like, oh, I don't believe that. I believe that evil is just human evil. And I'm like, well, I understand that. But C.S. Lewis has this great quote. He said that the greatest danger to human souls would be the psychologization of evil. To say that evil is just a human dysfunction when there's something else. And I don't know, Brian, if you've ever experienced something, well, you would just call it dark, out there yourself. You've been doing this so much more.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Brian. Go ahead. I want to hear your story.
I was going to say that you know, the whole thing I experienced, you know, I've told Anita about this, and I think I've mentioned on the show a couple of times that it's, you know, experiencing, you know, my parents' house that I grew up in, and there was never, you know, we were the first ones to live in that house, and there was nobody there before us, but it was just all happened, you know, in one night where I just felt, you know, something actually pinning me down, and I couldn't move, and it's, you know, I thought it was a dream, and I woke up, and it was still happening, and you know, and I ever since that happened, I had these weird dreams ever since then. You know, of course, that freaked me out, and it's, you know, it kind of stuck with me, but it seems like after I experienced that, I had these weird dreams where I was actually seeing the town that I lived in, but I was seeing it very old, and all the buildings were decrepit, and there were old, just like school buildings that weren't there that were just like falling in, and it's, you know, there was like fires all over the place. Just very weird, very vivid dreams to that effect after having that. So that was, you know, that's always really stuck with me.
Wow.
And it's, and that whole thing, it really hit me in a lot of the stuff that I've looked into here. Everybody has the tendency to think about when we have a house that's experiencing a haunting or something. We always see these, you know, big Victorian homes, these old houses built in the 1800s. We think of a haunting, but it's, you know, a lot of the cases down here is like in this case here. It's, you know, nobody else has lived there, but, you know, me and my family, we're, you know, and everybody's experienced something. And, you know, just a place across the street, you know, there was, some paranormal investigators go in there, and some people have had a lot of problems in there, but there was, you know, a major Civil War battle here, so we don't really know the history of exactly, you know, we know the history of the Civil War, but there was Indians here before that and everything, so we don't really know past the history of what went on here before then.
Wow. And you see, that's what blew my mind when I started doing, I'll call it formal investigation, like with a team, was how many new condos and homes and businesses built in the last 10 years I was going into. Like you said, you're expecting old Victorian homes or something, and that was never the case.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and look at the film Poltergeist. I mean, I think that brought, you know, the new home into the forefront of people's minds for a while after those films came out, because it, you know, while it wasn't a real story, it brought to the attention to people of, you know, you can build a new home on land with a history.
Yeah.
This is what can happen. You know, there are things that could already be there. It doesn't matter how long the house was there.
Exactly. And
I'm not sure how many people thought of that. I mean, I've experienced things in this house since I moved here. And, you know, of course, we know the history of the house because Brian built it. You know, he's the only one who's lived here, or the only owner since it was built. So it has to be, you know, obviously tied to the land and the surroundings or us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the only options. And, you know, when it comes to dark things or whatever you want to call them, one thing I was thinking earlier when you were talking about that is, you know, I've heard a lot of Christians say that the devil's biggest trick is to make you think that he doesn't exist.
Yep.
And one thing I always bring up to people, because I've experienced something, I've seen something twice in my life and felt something a few times that was not human. You could not convince me that it was human, and you could not convince me that it was nice. And there are, you can take coffee and put it in a cup and call it tea, and it's still coffee. Whatever they are, you can argue all day long whether the devil exists or whether demons are real. And, you know, thanks to all of the shows all over television dropping the big D word every 5 seconds, you know, it's kind of like Brian was talking about me with the door earlier. You know, they see a light flicker and there's a demon in the house. And that's starting to numb people to the idea of it. There are so many people who hear this and see this and know that everything that they're seeing on the television is nothing but a big crock of BS. So therefore, the D word goes in that crock of BS in their mind. But every religion recognizes them.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they call it a demon, whether they call it a djinn, whether they call it a daemon or a guard, or a, you know, some of them are okay with them, most of them are not. It doesn't matter what they call the things. Again, if you put coffee in a cup and call it tea, it's still coffee. You haven't changed it.
Right.
And you to know, deny as many reports as of them as there are, to deny that they exist, to at least, you know, not acknowledge that there is a possibility that there are millions of people across the planet that have not imagined these things, although we know there are many who have. There's just too many real cases to just throw it out the window, and people don't have to agree about what to call it. They don't have to subscribe to a particular religion to believe in it. Many people have this misconception that the demon, whatever it may be, is just a, you know, associated with Christianity. And that is so very not true. There is not one culture on this planet that does not acknowledge them.
Oh, exactly. And I think one of the, I mean, there's a whole mythology to them in Jewish and Christian history and theology. They're all fallen angels. So if you think about an angel, I mean, whenever an angel shows up in scripture, the first words out of its mouth are, "Don't be afraid." I mean, they're not these little cherubic things. They're scary-ass things. Yeah, and could you imagine them unhappy? But I will say that I think two of the greatest dangers in the paranormal field are, A, to believe that they don't exist, or B, to believe that they're everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that we swing, as far as the media goes, we swing between these two poles. And so how can anyone take this field seriously when what they see is, you know, people jumping and screaming and running from a room because there's a demon every time a door closes or they hear something on a recorder, or people sitting up there saying, "Oh, there's nothing there, there's nothing there, there's nothing here." I mean, it makes everything look silly. But the really scary thing is, you know, if there are these forces out there, and I believe very firmly there are, and I believe they're intelligent, and their intelligence is so far beyond ours and ancient, that if they were going to manipulate people and make themselves more nondescript, they would want that sort of thing on TV that made them look silly, or belief in them silly. You know, and so it there's always this whole, you know, mind blowing thing where you're just like, what caused what? What's causing what? The same with possession. When people are like, you know, do the possessed people want to be possessed because you said there has to be an invitation? It's like, no, they don't want it. They never wanted it.
Right.
The invitation was not a, "Hey, come possess me" invitation. It began as a sort of obsession, maybe with an entity, maybe not, and continued from there. So it's people often misunderstand the terms, and so they get confused, and then they say, "Well, this can't be true," because they're thinking something else. And that can also be a problem. I mean, the field's riddled with orbs and mists and all manner of things. People are misunderstanding terms or what it is we're doing. And there's a lot of that out there when it comes to evil.
On a bigger scale, you know, than just either everything's a demon or there are no demons being a danger. I think that within that lies the biggest danger and the biggest mistake that the paranormal field is making, is going either all one direction or the other, and not being completely open-minded to anything being possible. I mean, if we look at science and what we know, it's always being expanded, improved upon. If we were to take known science as it is right now and decide that this was fact and not theory, which really most of it is called theory. If we were to decide all of this is hard fact, it cannot change, then we are done learning. There is no more learning. There's no point in trying to find anything else out.
But if we're looking at stuff on this huge scale, though, if we're looking at stuff, if we're looking at the universe on this huge scale, if we say the universe is never ending, it's never, there is no beginning or end to it. You know, we think so much in our minds that we're the center of the universe, but you know, there's no beginning end to this universe. There's no beginning end to, you know, the different dimensions, as Christina was talking about earlier. How do we even begin to concept the thought of anything or act like we know exactly what's going on with anything? And how do we, you know, where do we go from there?
Well, that's just it. I don't think we do know, and I'm really starting to personally question if we're supposed to know everything.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's a lot of things. I mean, I have experienced so many things that should be explainable and aren't. You know, there are many things, just like I was pointing out the other day, when you notice patterns of things happening. You know, things breaking, things falling apart, and they're all happening in a sequence in one certain amount of time. If you look at each individual thing, yeah, it could have a natural explanation. But when you put it all together in a bigger picture, you're left going, okay, what's this about? Yeah. You know, my mom's truck has broken down 7 times in 5 weeks. Six of those incidences were all in the last week. It's hard not to sit there and say, okay, what doesn't want you on the road, and why is it that every time this happens, you're in a safe place?
Yeah, exactly.
So there's something working that's beyond us that we don't fully understand. I think we can be more in touch with it.
Well, I think that's where the stuff
try, but I don't think that science can explain everything, at least not in our lifetimes.
Well, I think that's where the dangers of these TV shows come in. I mean, you've got the, you know, run-of-the-mill client who, you know, and a lot of people say, you know, the people in the paranormal field are fame-hungry, but I have also ran across the client that was fame-hungry. They want their house to be haunted. They want their hotel to be haunted. They want this, that, the other going on because they've seen these shows. They have some kind of weird thought in their head they can get on one of these shows just as much as the people that go on and investigate there. So they've got their mind trained to think like these people on these shows. Everything's a demon. You know, this picture of a dust is a demonic entity. You know, all this, and then they get the team in there that has been trained from the shows, and all they do is constantly feed each other false positives. They're never getting any answers. They're never really, you know, getting a bigger picture drawn for them, because all they're doing is you've got a TV trained client and a TV trained team, and they are constantly feeding on each other's fears and false positives, and they're not making any progress except for to create more fear, more paranoia for both of them, which could not be good for any kind of a location, whether it be haunted or not. It could be just something that could be completely debunked. But how much, if you walked into a place that was completely clear, there was no spirit, there was no nothing there, it was completely explainable, and everybody feeds on fears and falseness so much, they put so much negative energy into it that something is actually there now. This energy is manifested. It's opened the door for something to come in. I mean, this is where the real danger in this stuff comes in at.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. Right there is the invitation. And, you know, when we talk about, excuse me, the universe being so big and science, you know, ever expanding and ever understanding more and more, like Anita said, you start to look at people who are like, oh, that's not possible. And like, I'm sorry, you're an idiot. Yeah. How could you think something's not possible? You know, do you mean that right now we know everything that is ever going to be known about the world around us? My biggest thing when people start to argue that there is nothing after this, and frankly, you know, as an aside, I was shocked that there are atheists in this field who are dead set against any afterlife or any. And I don't believe that everything that I've seen is an afterlife type deal. I've seen time rifts too, which was really interesting. But you know, I couldn't believe that they were there. And when people say things like that, my favorite argument is with them, all right, can we accept that mathematics is a language that is true across the universe and can be used to explain the universe, to predict the universe, to even manipulate the universe. Using mathematics, we can do anything we need to do, and they're true everywhere. It's, you go on any planet, 2 + 2 = 4. And they usually say, well, yes. And then I ask them, why? Why in a random universe would that universe be explainable at all? Why does it have a language that is true and runs through every aspect of its being, from music to the DNA to the, you know, the magic ratio and all of that? Why would any of that be true? Why would it be explainable at all? Why can we predict it? And, you know, that just starts to mess with your head a little bit. And the same with the demonic issue, when people are like, well, I don't believe those things exist. I believe that people make patterns because they would rather be afraid than feel helpless, that the universe is random. And I believe there is a certain randomness to the universe. Then I also ask them to take a deep, dark look into the history of humanity. Take horrible events, you know, just the Holocaust always comes to mind or something similar. It always starts with one person. It's never a mass hallucination. It starts with one person. And when you think about how can an entity manipulate, can it manipulate 500 people at a time?
Mm-hmm.
Or can it manipulate one person who can manipulate 500 people at a time?
Exactly.
You know, exactly. Where's the logic in that? And then once you have one charismatic person who can manipulate 500 people, then you can rule the world. And that's kind of what the Judeo-Christian understanding of demons they're trying to do. They don't stand up there, throw off their robes, and say, hey, look right here, see my horns? No, they're very subtle. You know, there's this ancient Cherokee story where the father is explaining to the son that throughout your life, you have two wolves on each side of you. One is always trying to get you to do evil, to hurt the helpless, to rob the orphan. The other wants you to be good, noble, and strong, to protect the helpless at the sacrifice of your own life. And they will both battle for your soul as long as you live. And the son says, well, which one wins? And the father says, the one you feed.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's where, when it comes down to each and every one of us, that's where we're always vying. We're always choosing. And there's no amoral choice. Everything's a moral choice. And you have to choose more love than not. We can't always be all loving all the time. We're not capable of it. But when you're talking about evil and how can you protect yourself from this happening, don't choose that obsession. Don't choose that. So always choose in the other direction.
Right.
Absolutely. And we're just about out of time here. We're going to give you a chance to mention your Sunday morning radio show real quick, and so everybody can tune in and listen to more of you.
Oh, thank you, Brian. I am a Reverend Bishop Christina Rake, head of the Charismatic Universalist Church. If you go to blogtalkradio.com and look up Charismatic Universalist Church, you'll find that we have a show on Sunday mornings. It's me. I'm talking about religious, psychological topics. Half of it is fun and education, lots of songs, prayers, but it's me kind of waxing philosophical and tickling your brain. So you can come join me. It's 9 a.m. on Sundays every week for 2 hours. And
that's one church I may attend right there, because that sounds like some good stuff. And it's not Jehovah's Witness, so everybody show up. Give it a listen.
No, I'm you know. Liberal, guys. It's liberal. It's fun. It's not sin. It's inspiration.
That's right. Everybody tune in to Christina and give her a listen. And be sure to tune us into us every Tuesday here on Jackalope Radio. We're fixing to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Christina, for being on. You've been a wonderful guest, as usual.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right. We're heading out here.
For Night Watch.
Yep. Night Watch is coming up. Stay tuned. Good stuff coming up. Everybody have a good week. See you next week.